Now we're holding on page 46 in Chagiga, about the middle of the page, middle of Oisayin, for those using other editions. We learned last time about something that Bar Hey asked Hillel. The Pashtus is the same. This may be the same Ben Hey Hey that we have at the end of Perek Hey of Pirkei Avos. Whatever the case, he asked Hillel about the difference between Ovid Elokim and Asher Lo'avodei, which the difference between somebody who reviews as learning 100 times versus 101, which, as we know, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya why one is an Ovid Elokim and the other is Asher Lo'avodei. So now, since we mentioned Bar Hey Hey, so the Gemara mentions another thing, another teaching of Torah involving him. So Rabbi Yehu says to Bar Hey Hey, or some say that he said to Rabbi Lozer, my dichtiv, the pasuk says in Yeshaya, hine tzrafticha v'loy v'chose. Shem says, I've purified you, but not with silver. B'charticha b'chur oini. I have chosen you in the crucible, a kur, like you have kura barzel in Parashas Vayeshanan, and it's like a big pot, like a very hot furnace that you smelt and purify metal in. So I've chosen you in the smelting pot of poverty. So what does that pasuk mean? Says Eliyahu, Malam Chachozer, Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Midas Tovis, looked in the Israel. Hashem was looking among all the possible good midas to give to the Jewish people. And the best thing that he was able to find, the most suitable midah tova for the Jewish people that Hashem was able to find, is anius, is poverty. So Rashi explains, in other words, therefore, so we're understanding the pasuk, I purified you, but not like the way that purified, that not like the way that silver is purified, namely in fire, but rather by being purified through being poor. That's Rashi. Maharal Shor doesn't like that expression, because then what do you mean, v'loy b'chosef, what's the bays doing over there? Rather, Maharal Shor explains what it means is, hinei tzrafticha, Hashem is saying, I have refined you, v'loy b'chosef, and how did I refine you? By making that you have no kesef, no money, that you're poor. So, and b'charticha b'chor oni, so it's called a midah, in what way is a midah tova? So Maharal Shor points out, when people are poor, then they don't have, and then it causes they feel more dependent on Hashem. When people are rich, when they have too much silver and gold, sometimes you find, like you find Moshe tells the Jewish people at the beginning of Parashas Devarim, you had so much gold that you didn't know what to do with it, and you wound up making the eagle. So therefore, here it's the other way around. There's a lot of other points that are made about it in Mefoshim. Ion Yaakov points out that when people are poor, then it makes them more humble. So it breaks their gaiva. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions in Beitza that the Jewish people are azin shabu umos, the most chutzpahdika and we stand on what's right than of all other nations. And if it weren't for the Torah, nobody would be able to stand us. So therefore, Anius helps moderate that. With that said, though, Eitz Yosef points out that we're not talking about real, the desperate poverty where a person pasha doesn't have the necessities of life. Adraba, that can make a person, we find even in a pasuk in Mishle, that can cause a person to become even worse. Rather, we're talking about the kind of poverty, not where the person is poor, like he can't afford to put bread on the table, but like, in other words, where he doesn't have extra money for excesses and luxuries and things like that, which then, like Maharal saying, he might end up misusing. So Shmuel says, or some say Rabbi Yosef said, Hainu de Amri Inshi, this is like a popular expression. People say, Yoy ani yustal Yisrael, poverty is befitting for the Jewish people, kevarda or kebarza sumka, l'susya chibra, like a red varda would mean a rose, barza would mean, barza means a ribbon or a strap or something like that, for l'susya chibra, for a white horse. In other words, Pashat Pshat is, in other words, the same way you decorate, you have a white horse, you put a red ribbon on it, and it shows up very nicely against the background of the horse and makes it look much more beautiful. The same way, in other words, poverty is a nice ornament for the Jewish people. What's the symbolism of a white horse and a red ribbon? So Maharsha explains, a white horse, if a person, the Gemara mentions in Brachos, there's a whole sugya over there about things a person sees in a dream and what they mean. One of them is it mentions over there, if a person sees a white horse in a dream, then it's a good sim. Then on the other hand, if he sees a red horse in a dream, it's not so good. So, and the idea is, and with the white horse represents that his averus have been cleaned up, like you have in the pasuk, yuchateichem kashanim, even if your averus are red like scarlet, hashalek yalbinu, they'll become white like snow. So therefore, so the white horse represents that his averus have been cleaned up. So now we're saying poverty itself is like red. It's something, it's not such a good thing. It's like red. It's a negative thing, but it helps, like what it accomplishes for a horse, to make it more beautiful, the same way it has the effect over you. Marshall makes another point as well, that a white horse all by itself is very beautiful and attractive. You don't really need to put a bunch of ornaments on it to make it more attractive. All you put on it is one red ribbon, and that's enough. So the same way the Jewish people all by themselves are beautiful and may have beautiful Torah, we don't need riches in order that we should be a good, worthy nation. So Hashem also at various times in history gives us gold and silver, but the point is that we're, like a white horse, we're attractive and beautiful and graceful even without that. There are a lot of different points that are made about this, and particularly about the comparison to a red strap. There's an interesting vote from them that's brought from the Chozer Melublin that says, you know, so if you suppose you have a white horse, when are you going to decorate it with the red ribbon? When it's standing there in your barn? No, when you're taking it out for show. So he says the same way. It doesn't mean over here the Gemara means to say, Shmuel or Rabbi Yosef is saying, it's not necessary for the Jewish people to actually have poverty on the inside, that they should tack to be poor in their own houses. Just on the outside, when it comes to showing to what it looks like in front of the goyim, it's better that we keep a low profile and don't show ourselves off as rich in front of them because it makes them jealous. But that a yid should have ashirus, by all means, a yid should by all means have ashirus, but it shouldn't be, it's not to display in front of the goyim, but in his own household so that he's able to use it properly for mitzvahs. Then there's something in Oda Torah, there's something from the Tzemach Tzedek that talks about on the deeper level of it. He talks about that a horse represents Bina, it represents Shem Sag, which is the ruchniestic source of Bina, and the red ribbon, the red represents Gvura. So he explains that the idea is, in other words, the poverty we're talking about is the fact that a person feels a sense of anivus and a sense of bittul towards the Eibishter. So that's a very good thing. It's a very becoming thing for the Jewish people, that way we're able to bring down the giluyim from Shem Sag, the giluyim of Bina, into our world in a way where they're held back by gvuras in such a way that they don't end up being misused, similar to what Marshall was saying on a more pshat level. So a number of different points of why the Gemara uses this figure of speech. Okay. So now, the previous Mishnah had started saying that you have to bring your Ola Su'iyah and your Shalmei Chagiga during Yom Tov, or during, in the case of Shavuos, during the few days after Yom Tov, and if not, then it's a missed opportunity and you can't make it up, and it's an example of a Mu'uvas Lo Yuchal Liskon, something crooked that can't be made straight anymore. And then the Mishnah had digressed to give some other examples of that kind of thing, a Mu'uvas Lo Yuchal Liskon. For example, we said a person who misses Krishma in the morning or in the evening, or a person who misses one of the daily tefillahs. And that led the Gemara into this discussion about Oved Elokim and Asher Le'avodoi and so on. So now the Mishnah continues, Rav Shimon Menasya Omer, Ezehu Mu'uvas Shelo Yuchal Liskon. What is an example of someone did a crooked thing that can't be made straight? Zeh Habala Erva V'Hulad Mimena Mamzer. This would be a case where a man had relations with a woman who's an erva to him, and they produce a mamzer. And you have to realize, because Rav Shimon Menasya says, in terms of a goyin of a gozel, because otherwise, if you're going to think that it refers to somebody who steals or robs, that's not, it's a ma'uvas, it's a crooked thing, but it's not lo yuchal liskon. It's not that you can't fix it up. Yochal hu lachzira the attacking. After all, you can return it, and you'll fix up what you did wrong. So therefore, so when it says, when Shlomo HaMelech says, ma'uvas lo yuchal liskon, he's talking about something where a person has done something where now there's no way to undo it. Namely, where now there's a mamzer in the world. The Alter Rebbe famously mentions this at the end of Perek Zayin of Tanya, that you have, he contrasts it with the Zer al Batola, where as bad as it is, and as serious an Aveda as it is, at least there's no actual entity in the world that comes from it. Mashenkin, we're talking about over here, Abola Erva, Vahulim Mena Mamzer, where, you know, it's as the Alter Rebbe finishes off over there in a slabship, a guf boss of a dumb, it's now the clipper is vested in an actual physical body. Yeah, but mentions over there of Shira Masefer HaTanya, famously the story involving the great chassid of the Alter Rebbe, of Yosef Beshenkovitzer, where the Alter Rebbe told them to become a Balagola, And he continues for that for years. And then, to make a very long story short, he meets up with a Yid who's completely estranged from Yiddishkeit and is married to a Goita and has a couple of children with her. And he helps him do tshuva. And then the Eibishter accepts the guy's tshuva to the extent that even the children drown. And that's the end of them. So that's an example of where it is taka. There is a way of being misaken and after the fact, but it requires a special esurusa d'leila, like in that example. And it requires that the guy really did tshuva me'av. Anyway, that's Rav Shimon Manasseh's point, is therefore it has to refer to something like that. Tosfos says, okay, well, what about, you could say, for example, somebody killed somebody. He can't bring him alive again either. Fine, Tosfos says, but the difference is, at least you don't have the evidence of it right in front of us all the time, as opposed to the mamzer is actually there all the time. You can see him and everybody can refer to him. This mamzer came from Ploini, who did a bia asura. Tosfos also mentions in that connection Gneva, actually, and Maharshal says, what do you mean? The Mishnah itself is saying that Gneva, there's no problem because you can return anyway. Maharshal says, fine, but let's say, for example, a person stole Gozel Sarabim, a person, for example, a storekeeper who had dishonest weights and measures, he can never really fully return it because he doesn't know who he cheated, what he's supposed to do. The Gemara tells us elsewhere, is he supposed to use it for Tzorchei Rabim? He should use it for things that are going to be used by the public, and therefore the likelihood is that eventually everybody who he cheated is going to end up having enough. And it's still not a complete thing, fine. But even so, the fact is you don't have the evidence right in front of us the way you have when there's a mamzer. So therefore, that's why Rav Shimon Manasseh says Dafka, it's talking about when a mamzer was produced. Continues the Mishnah. Rav Shimon Yechoy Omer, no. Rav Shimon Yechoy says that's not what the pasuk means. The word ma'uvas, crooked, suggests only it must mean somebody who originally was straightened out and then became crooked. So if you're talking about, Reb Shimon says, you're talking about a man who was mezana with an erva and they had a mamzer, he wasn't necessarily mesukan before that. Fine, he hadn't done the Aveda before that. He didn't necessarily have such great mitzvahs before that either. So you can't necessarily call him ma'uvas. The Eze, so what is the definition of Mu'uvas Layuchaliskan, says Rav Shimon, is a Tamid Chochem, a Purish Minat Torah, a Tamid Chochem who abandons learning Torah, so he started out straight, and now he makes himself crooked. That, Rav Shimon saying, is the example of Mu'uvas Layuchaliskan that Shlomo means in the Pasuk. So in short, there's three ways of looking at, so among the Tanoim, what Mu'uvas Layuchaliskan is. One, any time when a person missed out on a mitzvah saseh. One, when a person did a lois saseh that has an ongoing effect, mislavish beguf bos of adam in this world, and then Rav Shimon's page 46 in Chagiga, and then Rav Shimon Yochai's definition, which is where he was originally on the right path, and then he went off the death. Okay, so the Gemara says v'holid men mamzer v'chola. So we're saying only if he produced them, only if he fathered a mamzer with her, implying holid ein loy holid loy. Only if they actually had a mamzer, not otherwise. Implying, in other words, even if the man was mezana with an HS ish, if there was no child from it, then it's not. Then Rav Shimon is not. Rav Shimon Manasseh is not calling that ma'uvas lo yuchal liskan. The problem with that is, v'altanya, we learn in a b'raisa, Rav Shimon Manasseh Omer, goinav adam efshe sheyachzik nei vasev yisakin. A person kidnaps another person, or steals from another person. Efshe sheyachzik nei vasev. So fine, he's able to return what he stole via sakin, and then he fixes it up. Goes along, he stole for you, he robbed a person. Same thing, efshe sheyachzik nei vasev via sakin, he can undo that as well. Avol habal ish. But, says Rav Shimon Manasseh, a man was mezana with an eshes ish for osra abayla, and he made her also to her husband, nitrad bina olam v'holach loy, then he's pushed out of the world, he's driven out of the world, and he's a goner. Meaning, in other words, so what does that mean? So there's a parenthetical note brought in Rashi that comes from Tosfos that says that his aveda wouldn't be cleaned up with tshuva. What do you mean? Tosfos says there's nothing that ever stands in the way of a Baal Teshuva, no matter how low he fell. Like in that story with Rabbi Yosef Bashentovitz, so that we were just talking about. The guy was married to this Goita for years. He had two children with her already, and still Rabbi Yosef was able to be ma'ur him to Teshuva. So why is it ma'uvas l'yocholiskan? Is again because the fact is you have a mamzer around. As long as that mamzer is alive, then everybody notices and then knows that it comes from him. And the nitzred mina olam, also Maharshal says, it doesn't mean that he lost his place in olam haba completely. What it means is he's going to have to go through a spell in Gehenna. Most other Jews, as we learned in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, they may have enough schusim that even though they have averus, they can still be saved from Gehenna. Here, because he was Baal Ishasish, means he's, when we say Nitzer min ha'olam b'holachloi, means he is going to have to spend a spell of time in Gan Eden, I mean in Gehenna. Ultimately, though, Ko Yisrael Yeshlem Chayuk Olam Haba, and he also will have a Chayuk Olam Haba, and eventually after he gets cleaned up again. So the point is, though, that Reb Shimon ben Manasseh is saying in this Braisa that just the fact that he had relations with an Ishasish and asked her to her husband is already enough to call him Uvas L'Yochol Liskun. Not like in the Mishnah where he's saying only where Mamzer was fathered from it. And the Braisa continues, Reb Shimon Yechoy, who said in the Mishnah that Uvas L'Yochol Liskun means a Tamid Chacham who went off the Derech, he says, consider, Ein Oymin Bachru Gomel, nobody would ever say, check this camel and see whether it has any mumim, and if not, then it'll be good for a korban. Of course not, because you can't bring camels a korban. Bachru chazir. You don't say check this chazir to see if it has any mumim. It doesn't make a difference. Ela bachru tleh. What do you say to look for is on a sheep, on a lamb, to see if it's suitable for a korban. Because it might be. Originally it was suitable, and now it has a mumim, and it's not. The same way, Reb Shimon is using this as a marshal for what he said in the Mishnah, that Uvas Lo Yochol Liskun is somebody who was on the right path and then went off it. So again, the Baal Ishasish, he would say, fine, he was Sur Meira until now, and now he fell through, but he wasn't necessarily Asei Toiv. Reb Shimon says, when he's in Uvas Lo Yochol Liskun, Davka, when he was Asei Toiv beforehand, and now he's fallen away from that. And what is that? Zatamad Chacham, a Kodesh Menat Torah. That would be a Tamad Chacham who abandons learning Torah. That's the equivalent, the Bakru Tleh. And therefore, that Reb Shimon Yechoy says is the Mu'uvas Lo Yochol Liska. The Braisa continues, Reb Yehuda ben Lakish Omer, more on that topic of the of a Tamad Chacham who goes away from Torah. Paul Tamad Chacham, a Kodesh Menat Torah, a Tamad Chacham who abandons learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, all of our kosev omer, the pasuk says about such a person, kitzipo nededes min kina, like a bird that wanders away from its nest. It's supposed to be in its nest. What's it doing? Wandering around, homeless. Kain ish noded mimakoma, the same way as a person who wanders away and then loses his place. So in other words, his nest should be the Torah, and haitochen that he's going away from it. What's the comparison to a bird? Marsha points out that the Gemara tells us in Erchin, famously, one of the things that a person gets tzaras for is for speaking Lashon Hara, and why afterward the first stage of his Tara involves where they use two birds, and Rashi mentions this on the Pasuk as well, that birds are always twittering and twittering and then chirping and whatever, and so it represents that he was making too much noise with Lashon Hara, and instead he should be making the noise of learning Torah. So therefore learning Torah is compared to the chirping of birds, and so therefore here the Gemara is using the same metaphor. So now he's wandered away from his nest and he's lost his place. The Omer, and we have another pasuk that expresses the same idea. The Eibishter says through the Nobi, Ma motzu abisechem bi oval, what did your ancestors find anything unjust with me? Ki rochaku me'olai, that they distanced themselves from me, implying that originally they were close. And how were they close to Hashem? Through Torah and mitzvahs, and now they've distanced themselves because now they're not doing it. So therefore, again, we see that when a person was close to Hashem and then he went far away from it, then it's much more disappointing to Hashem than if to begin with he didn't know the right way to begin with. Anyway, the bottom line is, we brought the whole Braisa. The point was that we were asking that Rav Shimon ben Manasseh seems to be contradicting himself, because in the Mishnah he says only if Cholid B'men and Mamzer is it Mu'uvas Lo Yochol Liskun, and the Braisa is saying just because he had relations with an Eishas Ish is already enough, just because he asked her to her husband. So the answer is like Hasha, kan ba achoset pnuya, kan ba ishes ish. In the Mishnah, he's talking about where the erva that he committed znus with was his sister who was unmarried. So he hasn't asked her to her husband because she doesn't have a husband. So only if a mamzer is produced from it, only then is it mu'uvas lo yochol liskun. Otherwise, it means she can't marry a koyin, fine, but okay, her basherta wasn't necessarily a koyin anyway. So therefore, that would be where Reb Shimon Manasseh is saying specifically when Cholid B'men and Mamzer, Kan Be'eshesish, as opposed to when the woman was an Eshesish, that alone, he's Mazana with her, causes her to be also to her husband, that's an irrevocable thing. another answer. Both statements of Rav Shimon Manasseh can be referring to an Eishes Ish, for like Kasha Kan Ba'onis Kan Berotzen. One would be talking about where she was forced into it, she was raped, and the other one where it was willingly. As we know, with a Yisrael, if his wife is Nanas, then she's still Mutter to him, only a Koyan is she also. So therefore, if it was Yisrael's wife and it was an Onus, then it's not Mu'uvas Lo Yocholiskan, unless the Mamzer was produced from it, because she's not also to her husband. Or even both of them could be talking about onus, because it depends who her husband is. If her husband's a kohen, even though it was ba'onus, she's also to him forever, that would be ma'uvas lo yochol liskan. If her husband is a Levi or a Yisrael, then it's not there. It's still a serious aveda, but it's not lo yochol liskan unless there's an actual mamzer comes. Since we mentioned the case where Talmud Chacham abandons learning Torah, so now the Gemara is going to point out it's not even only when he abandons Torah completely; it's even when he goes down to a lower level of learning than he's supposed to be on. The way it works is, you know, a person starts out with Mikra, then afterward Ben Chomesh Shana Mikra, Ben Esher Shana Mishnah, Ben Chamesh Esher the Gemara, etc. And as the Rambam explains in Hilchos Talmud Torah, there comes a point, as the Alter Rebbe also explains in more detail, there comes a point in a person's life where he's mastered Gemara, meaning the ability to analyze the Mishnayos and Braises and understand the reasoning behind them and when a particular case in the Mishnah applies and that kind of thing. At that point, basically, he should be sticking to that for the rest of his life. Every so often, he should be reviewing Mikra and Mishnah so he doesn't forget them, but primarily he should be focusing on Gemara. So now the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, those who are going out and those who are coming in have no peace. The context of the Pasuk is that the Navi is talking about how bad things have been now. If he's talking about at the beginning, he's talking about during the time of Golus Bavel and now in the early years of Bayis Sheni, where the Navi is saying, you know, shape up and then do what the Eibishter wants, and then you'll have peace and then you'll have all the brachas. So what's this for the Yotzev Labo Ein Shalom? So Omar Rav, Kivin Shi Yotze Odom Dvar Halacha, the Dvar Mikra, when a person gives up learning Dvar Halacha, which is Gemara, from which you can directly derive the Halachas, and goes and regresses to learning Mikra, Shuv Ein Lo Shalom, then he's not going to have peace anymore because he can't paskin Halachas from Mikra. You need Dvar Halacha at least. So Dvar Halacha is not necessarily Gemara. Dvar Halacha can even be Mishnayos. At least the Mishnayos do give you the basic halachas. But if you regress from that and start focusing much more on Mikra, then you have a problem because now you're not going to know what the halacha is anymore. You're not going to know what to do and what not to do. Or Shmuel, Amazat Purish Menat Talmud the Mishnah. Shmuel says even more so. A person has already reached the stage of Talmud and he knows already how to analyze the Mishnayos and understand what you do with Mishnayos that contradict one another, Rashi says, and to understand the reasoning behind the dinim and therefore how to apply them to similar cases. If he gives that up and starts working exclusively on memorizing Mishnayos, then again, he's not going to have any shalom because you can't really paskin halacha directly from the Mishnah. Many times we have throughout Shas, we have Mishnayos where it says something and the Gemara explains that it doesn't mean exactly what it says in the Mishnah. It applies only in certain limited circumstances, or even that this Mishnah is a das yochid, etc., etc. So therefore, you need Talmud. So Mela, a person is still only up to Mishnah, fine. By all means, continue at it, and eventually you'll graduate to Gemara. But once you're at Gemara already, which is what Rashi also calls Shimur Shtamar Chachamim, where you're serving and learning personally one-on-one by a Talmud Chacham, then you shouldn't be regressing and going back to Mishnah.
That all of the Giluyim he had was learning Mishnah.
Fine, because he wasn't giving up Dvar Halacha, he wasn't giving up Talmud for Mishnayos. He was, in addition to the Talmud that he was working on and working on his Sefer, the Beis Yosef, and working on the Shulchan Aruch, in addition, he was studying Mishnayos in his spare time, and from that he got his Giluyim. There may also be a difference. The truth is, with all this said, there may also be a difference between before the Gemara was written down versus afterwards. When the Gemara hadn't been written down yet, as Rashi is saying, you need Shimush Tamar Chachamim, you need to learn personally under a Talmud Chacham to learn all these Taimei Mishnayos. After that, it's less necessary because it is written down. You still have to learn under a Rebbe. You still can't learn. You can't learn forever from an old Sroel Gemara Lamazagan. But you don't need as much. So you could spend more time on Mishnayos, presumably, than you would have back when it was all about that. Maharsho explains like this. The beginning of that pasuk in Zechariah, the words before Vayotze v'Labayin Shalom, Zechariah is saying that before those times and in the previous times when you were having such hardships, nobody was even able to earn a living. Schara Adam Lanio, Schara Behema Inena. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that this is one of these signs, but this is one of the clear signs of that the Gola is coming when the economy is so bad that nobody is able to even be hired out and make a living. Now, you find at the end of the Teuchacha in Chumash Devarim, in Parshas Kisavo, you find that the Smakautim, you're going to want to be selling yourselves as slaves, the Ein Koine, and nobody's going to want to buy. So the usual understanding, we say nobody's going to want to buy, as Rashi says, because they're gonna figure all Yidden are being marked for destruction, Rahman Latzlan, and who needs that? Here, Mao Shah apparently is understanding the Ein Koine because nobody can afford to. So on the other hand, V'la Yotze V'la Ba'in Shalom is something that you have all the way at the beginning of the Teuchatha, Orata B'Vayecha, Orata B'Tesecha, where we have the opposite of it in the Brachas, Borachat B'Vayecha, Borachat B'Tesecha. So now the Gemara is explaining, that's why the Gemara is explaining, we're not just talking about Yotze V'la Ba as in orata b'ir, orata b'asodu, orata b've'echa, orata b'tesecha. It means specifically where people are not going to be able to know clearly what the halacha is, and the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and in Shabbos that is also a clear sign that the Geula is coming, when you're not going to be able to find anymore, as the Gemara says, halacha brura, or mishnah brura, b'makam echad, you're not going to be able to find a clear, unequivocal halacha anyway, which is very much as we have it nowadays, because just about anything in halacha, you find, there's a reason why they say two Jews, three opinions. And, you look at almost anything in halacha, you have such a multiplicity of opinions. So this is what we're talking about. You can't find halacha brura or mishnah brura b'makam echad, and therefore it shows that it's a much clearer, it's a much closer time to the time of the Gula Amitas Vashlema, when we will have v'ashiva shiftayach v'rishona, v'ashiva shiftayach v'rishona, v'yatzenu k'vachila, and then we'll have one unequivocal psak din from the Sanhedrin go. Anyway, Maharsho says that's why the Gemara is doubting it this way, because again, the Gemara wants to find a reason why this v'la yotze v'la ba'in shalom is something that shows that the Geula is approaching now. So the Gemara continues. So again, we had Rav saying when a person abandons Mishnayos for Tanakh, Shmuel says when he abandons Talmud for Mishnah, but Rabbi Yechanan says even more, afilu mitalmud l'talmud, even a person goes from one Talmud to the other. So Rashi says that means from the Yerushalmi to the Bavli. The Yerushalmi is much more straightforward. It's actually, but nowadays, the Yerushalmi is much more difficult to learn for a variety of reasons, one of them being because people are not as familiar with it, Pashut. But in principle, the Yerushalmi, the discussions in the Yerushalmi are much more straightforward. They usually don't have the tremendous amount of Shakla Batalia that you have in the Bavli. So in fact, elsewhere, the Gemara refers to the Gemara Bavli as Machshakim Oshivani. Hashem has placed me in darkness, because it's a very dark kind of thing to go and then figure out the bottom line based on a discussion in the Bavli, as compared to the Yerushalmi, which goes much more straightforward. Different other Mephoshim point out other angles on it as well. Another point the Gemara mentions elsewhere is the Chachamim in the Yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael were generally more collegial and more noyach to one another when it came to learning. They weren't looking like in the Bavli, where somebody says something and everybody's jumping on him to slug him up. So in that sense, also the style of learning in the Yerushalmi was more straightforward than the Bavli. Tosfos refers over here to the famous thing where Reb Zera had to fast 100 fasts to forget the style of learning of the Bavli, so he'd be able to move to Eretz Yisrael and learn in the yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael. There are Mephoshim who understand that it means even you go from Bavli to Yerushalmi. It's not just like Rashi says, from Yerushalmi to Bavli, but also the other way around. You go from Bavli to Yerushalmi. Again, it's a whole different style of learning, and you're likely to get confused, and you wind up that you don't really understand either of them well enough. Hakosev over here brings an interesting point from the Ritva. The Ritva learns this, that the Gemara Bavli style of learning in Bavel is machshakim, is a darkness. He says it wasn't always that way. There was a period of time, in particular during the time of Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef and Babel and Rabbi Yochanan and Eretz Yisrael, where the level of learning in Eretz Yisrael was much higher. They were being ruled over by the Romans, but during that period, the Romans were basically leaving them alone. It's a period in history that where the Romans were busy. They had like every emperor of those of theirs was getting assassinated within a few weeks or months or whatever, so they had no time to worry about to worry about the Jews. Meanwhile, in Babel, there were marauding armies and all kinds of problems like that. The Gemara gives an example in Chulin, where one time a marauding army came to Pumbedisa, and Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef have to run away from the city. So in the time like that, the Mitzvah says, is when the learning in Babel was not on the high level that it should have been, because they were being distracted by that kind of thing. In later times, it was the other way around. In Rav Ashi's times, for example, where we have Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad in Babel, then there's no question that the Torah of Babel went to a very high level, and it's not machshakim. Apichsidus, there's the idea that the Babli versus the Yoshami is Ur Choser versus Ur Yosher. So in that sense, it's the Choshech, but it's the Yisrin Ur Mitoch HaChoshech of the Babli. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan is saying they're so different in style and in methodology and everything that you go from one to the other, then you're going to get confused and you're not going to know straight what's going on. Okay. Mishnah mentions, the Mishnah summarizes different areas of halacha. One of the ones that's not here in Ein Yaakov, but one of the ones that it mentions in the Mishnah is the dinim of chagiga. The Mishnah is basically going to categorize the various areas of halacha into three major categories, in terms of how much of the details of them are in Torah Shebech Sal. So Chagiga is one of the examples where, actually it is Shabbos Chagigas Famiilis. So Chagigas is going to be in the middle category, the Mishnah is going to say, where it is in Torah Shebech Sal, but there's not that much detail about it. Many of the details about it are only in Torah Shebaal Peh, as opposed to the first category is going to be where there's next to nothing in Torah Shebech Sal, and the third one, which is not brought here in Ein Yaakov, is where most of the details are there already in Torah Shebech Sal in Chumash. So the Mishnah says, Heter Nedarim Perchen Ba'aber, the concept of being Matu Neder is flying in the air, it really doesn't have what to rely on. There's really nothing in Torah Shebech Sav. There's like a slight hint to it in Torah Shebech Sav, which the Gemara is going to discuss. It's basically completely, almost completely Torah Shebaal Peh, the concept of being Matur and Neder and the details of how to do it. The Tzemach Tzedek brings an Ora Torah. The reason behind it is, he says that he relates this Perchen Ba'aver to something that we're going to learn about in the next Perek about Migdol Pereach Ba'aver. He explains that it has to do with the Shem Yud of the letter Yud of Shem Yud Kevavke, and even higher than that. So like the ability to be able to be Matur and Neder is something that has to come from such a high level of Lakus that it can't even be slabish in words of Torah Shebech Sav. And therefore, it's pretty much exclusively in Torah Shabbat. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Hilchos Shabbos Chagigas V'Me'ilas, the dinim of Shabbos and the dinim of the Korban Chagiga and of Me'ila, Harem Kaharorim Atfluim Besaira, they're like mountains hanging on a hair. Shein Mikra Mort V'Halochas Merubas. You have very few psukim about it, but you have many, many halochas. Take Shabbos, for example. It mentions about Shabbos in a dozen places in the Torah. It mentions a couple of the halochas, but it doesn't really give enough detail. You would never know from Torah Shebech Sav all by itself everything that you can and can't do on Shabbos. So you have, it's like the halochas of Shabbos, which take up 175 simonim in Shulchan Aruch, to give you an example. It's like gigantic mountains that are suspended from a tiny little hair of the few details that are in the Pesukim. And the same way with Chagiga, and the same way with Me'ilah. As opposed to, the Mishnah goes on to say, let's say, for example, the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, the dinim of Karbonus, and a number of other areas of Halacha, you have quite a lot of detail about it, relatively speaking, in Torah Shebech Sav. Obviously, you still need Torah Shebaal Peh, but you have enough from Torah Shebech Sav that you can get a good general idea of what's going on. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Yesh Lehen Amashi Yismichu. Rabbi Eliezer says, what do you mean? What do you mean, Hetan Adorim Perchem Ba'aber? It does have what to rely on. There is something in the Pasuk that demonstrates clearly the concept of Ataras Adorim. Shenema ki yafli, Beis Pamin. Twice when the Torah talks about making a neder, it uses it once by Erchin, once by Nazirus. It says the expression ki yafli, which means when he declares. Aflor, Rashi says, Loshin Pirush, it means when he expresses it verbally. So why does it say twice? Achas haflala isur v'achas haflala hetu. Because it means one of them is to express the neder verbally. A neder is not a neder unless a person says it with his mouth. And the other one is to express to the chacham or to the shloisha hediotis that he regrets the neder or that he has a whatever and that he needs a hetu and that he needs to be matur neder. So therefore there is mashi smirchu. Rabbi Yeshua, I mean Yeshlama Mashi Smirchu. Rabbi Yeshua says another reason why we can say it has what to rely on. Shenema, Hashem says about when he swore about the generation in the midbar, Arboim Shana Okut Badur, Voimam Tari Levavim Behemla Yodrachai, Hashem Nishbati Ba'api, Hashem says, I swore in my anger, im yivoyin omunuchosi. So it means Ba'api Nishbati Vachazarti. Means Hashem is saying, in effect, I made that nedu in my anger. Implying, in other words, like I wasn't really, so to speak, in my right mind. I would say that about Hashem, but whatever. Anyway, so now I regret it, and therefore I have a basis for being matur neder. Tosfos actually points out, it's not here in the Gemara, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, it's in the Gemara, that actually, you know, when you get down to it, the neder that they're not going to come into Eretz Yisrael wasn't canceled. The fact is that generation didn't come into Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos explains, "Mivoyinam nochosi" doesn't just mean to come into Eretz Yisrael; it means to come into Olam Haba. And that we have the opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin that Dor Amidbar Yesh Lahem Chelik LaMamba. So therefore, he was in fact matur that neder in the end. Why? Because it was Ba'api, Hashem is saying it was in my anger, and therefore, so to speak, like I wasn't in my full senses at the time. There is, by the way, in Daf Yomi, we have in a few days, next Shabbos, Bez Hashem, we're going to have on Friday and on Shabbos all the famous stories of Rabba Baba Chana in the Gemara. And one of them is that one time he's visiting Haus Sinai and he hears a baskel saying, "Oyli shenishbaiti, woe to me that I swore, and now who's going to be mefer for me?" And Rabbi Baba Chana doesn't say anything. And when he comes back later and reports to the other Chachamim what he heard, they said that was very foolish of you. You should have realized that was the shvua that Ebishtim made that to send the Jewish people into Golos. And you're a Chacham, you could have been matted. And he himself thought maybe it's the Shavuot to bring the marble, but then why would the Eibishter say, oi? So we see this concept that he could have been matter, that the Eibishter made a Shavuot, so to speak, in his anger to send the Jewish people, that generation is not going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and that future generations are going to have to go into Galus, but there is the option always of being matter, and then canceling it, and the Eibishter takes us out of Galus Miyad Mash. So, okay, we'll finish up with this piece tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola. Chof Ches, thank you, Chof Chesav. So the Rebbe was talking about for years about that you have to publicize and reveal in the whole world the Alufa Shel Olam, the leader, the one leader of the world, which is Hashem. That I was talking about the Gola versus Geula, that you have the Aleph stuck into the word Gola to produce the word Geula, and that means including to influence the Umas Olam as far as the Shevet Mitzvot Bnei Noach and prepare them for the Hosel Hashem Amlufa. I actually, the other day, I was talking with a shliach here who was visiting in town from Texas. He was telling me an interesting point, actually. He likes to talk to his Jewish balabatim also about Shev Mitzvah Shmenei Noach on the theory that he figures you start talking to them about mitzvahs. Okay, I'm not religious. Why should I have to keep them? But you make them realize that we have something to teach the world. That sometimes gets them to pay more attention. And then in turn, well, if you have what to teach the world, then you yourself have to be on a higher level. And therefore, that's a Pesach to get them into mitzvahs as well. So the whole shturim about Shev Mitzvah Shmenei Noach, it comes out, is not necessarily only for the Umas Olam. It comes out, it has a place among Unzara as well. Okay. Continuing with halachas of wearing things on Shabbos that are or aren't considered carrying. We were talking about the other day, by the way, as far as pins and clothing. So to complete that point, by the way, I was asking Rabbi Ozdeba for some details about this. First of all, if you have something that's pinned up with a safety pin before Shabbos, then there's no issue wearing it out on Shabbos because it's already pinned up. If you have something where you need to pin it together with a safety pin on Shabbos, it's actually machlokas aposkim on that. There are achronim who said that it's also because it would be like sewing. You're putting the pin in and out through the clothing, so it's like sewing. Minchas Yitzchak held like that, and the Mishnah Berurah mentions that point, etc. On the other hand, the Rebbe actually had an exchange of letters with the Minchas Yitzchak about it, and the Rebbe argued on various grounds that it should be mutter to do it even on Shabbos as long as you don't put it in and out three times, because that already would be considered a more permanent thing. Rabbi Elsevier was mentioning that maybe you might argue to make a distinction between whether you're putting it, let's say, just like to replace a button that fell out or something, versus, for example, if the clothing is actually ripped and you're using the safety pin to hold it, to hold the ripped part together. I haven't seen where any of the poskim or the Rebbe in his letter made any such distinction. But anyway. If you have the pin in there before Shabbos, then the safety pin in there before Shabbos, then for sure you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Also, for example, you have, let's say, shaitel pins, bobby pins, all those kinds of things. If they're necessary to hold something in place, then they're fine on Shabbos. So now he goes on to say, you have a silver, you have a key, even if it's made out of silver. So it is a tachshit, so people have a minig to wear it on Shabbos. However, what we do is we wear it whether it's made out of silver or not, as part of a Shabbos key belt, or sometimes you see people in the veldt wearing it as a tie. The point is, it's something functional. It's not stam. It's not just a tachshit. It's something functional. When it comes to Shabbos key belts, by the way, kiyadua, first of all, you have to make sure that the key is an actual part of the belt, meaning that if you were to remove the key, the belt comes apart. So you don't just have the bendel go through the hole of the key. You have, for example, the clips go through holes that they punch in the key, or even through, for example, you have the top hole itself. You can have the one hook going through one side, the other side. That's also fine, Rabbi Elsevier pointed out to me, because after all, same thing. You would remove the key, you wouldn't have a belt. Now, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch goes on to say that you can't wear glasses on Shabbos outside. Now, that's one of those things where the halacha has changed from then to now, because in particular, glasses back then didn't have side pieces. You just wore them pinched onto your nose, so they could very easily fall off. Nowadays, if they have side pieces, then there's no issue with it. And Amad Dvar, you see all the time, people walk with glasses on Shabbos.